from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. The MLB postseason is brought to you by Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code POSTSEASON at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. Coming up on today's show, we're going to do our Giants mailbag. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted questions and topic ideas on Twitter. Our first question comes from Brian Peacock, who's the host of Locked On 49ers, by the way, and co-host of Locked On NFL. Brian says, who is starting first baseman on opening day 2021? Belt, Posey, Bart, or other? So I think this is a fascinating question because it opens up so many different topics. But just right off the bat, to answer who I think is the guy, it's going to be painful for a lot of Giants fans, I suppose, to hear this answer, but I do think the favorite there would still have to be Brandon Belt. And the reason I say it's painful, of course, is that there's been this ongoing, pretty much ever since he broke into the league, Giants fans have been split on their opinions of Belt. And the last couple of years have not been very good for him, with the bat especially. In 2018, he was just a little bit above average offensively, but was a good defensive first baseman and base runner, and therefore was still a positive contributor overall. But then this season, he was actually a tick below average by weighted runs created plus. So a below average with the bat first baseman is never what you want. But in a very telling way, Farhan Zaidi went on the Alex Pavlovich Insider podcast and talked about Brandon Belt, and also Posey, which we'll get to in a minute. But what he had to say about Belt was very interesting, and he said that Belt was, by all accounts, unlucky in 2019. And I think we've seen it over and over with him getting hurt by the home ballpark, and it doesn't always show up in like on-base percentage type numbers for him. He's actually done, I think, pretty well at Oracle Park over his career, but he definitely gets some homers robbed from him every single year at Oracle. And so if you convert, a handful of outs into home runs, it does make a big difference in an overall season line. And we can look at StatCast data to determine kind of what the results should have been based on the quality of contact for Belt this year. And over throughout his career since StatCast came into existence in 2015, he has massively underperformed his expected numbers, and just without digging too much deeper, it's easy to blame that on the ballpark, and his hot zone and where he hits the ball tends to be into that big gap in right center field. So we've heard an anonymous Giants executive say that the ballpark was built to screw over Brandon Belt, and I would tend to agree with that. And I also think it's a big factor that they're reconfiguring the outfield alignment with building bullpens out there. We still don't have the official plans, although I expect those to come out at some point in the next few weeks, and that will be very fascinating when it does. But perhaps they can build them in a place where Brandon Belt hits a lot of the balls that he hits that end up being converted into outs, and that could make a big difference for him offensively. He hits so many balls into Triples Alley, he has in his career. So you could easily add a lot of homers to his stat lines over the years that have been taken away by the ballpark. The other thing to note, like if you're looking at FanGraphs, for example, and you look at his wins above replacement in 2019, it was only 0.5. And a lot of that had to do with what looks like the worst defensive year of his career. But if you dig a little deeper, you'll see that a lot of that negativity comes from his time in the outfield. He did not rate at all as a good outfielder in 2019, and he never has when he's gone out there. And that's really not his fault. I mean, he was just being a team player and willing to go out there to the outfield when the team requested it of him. But actually, his first base defense still was well above average, and he's consistently rated as one of the best defensive first basemen in MLB, if not the best. So looking simply at projections for 2020, for example, Fangraphs still has him pegged at around 2 wins above replacement, and the Zips projection system projects into 2021 as well and has him at about 1.5 wins above replacement. So that's right in line with what he's being paid at, what is it, $16 million a year. That's pretty much the exact cost of 1.5 wins above replacement in free agency. So he's, to me, still a fine first baseman, especially if they really think that 2019 was unlucky. And when you look at wins above replacement, realizing that it was really suppressed by his negative impact in the outfield, which they don't have to continue to do. So anyway, that was a very long-winded answer for saying I think the favorite has to be Brandon Belt still. Kind of bullish on Belt, honestly, after hearing Farhan Zaidi say that, knowing they're going to reconfigure the outfield a little bit, and knowing that if they don't play him in the outfield, that defense is going to look a lot better. The one other thing to keep in mind, though, is he really was not moving well pretty much, I mean, for several months to the end of 2019. He was not moving well at all. So I don't know exactly what was going on there, but hopefully he can get his legs back in better shape so he can provide a positive impact on the bases, because he was really slowing them down at times in 2019. So just regarding Posey and Bart and their probability of playing first base down the line, I have just never been someone who thought that Buster Posey made any sense at first base. He's a good defensive catcher, so moving him to the least valuable defensive position on the field doesn't make any sense at all to me. And even if he's not hitting, he provides a lot of value defensively at catcher, so they really ought to just keep him there for as long as possible. And then a frequent counter-argument to this point is that if you look at his numbers in his career as a first baseman, they're so much better than his numbers at catcher. And that's true, but it's also a misleading statistic, because the reason he often started at first base historically in his career was when there was a lefty on the mound and they used it as an opportunity to rest Brandon Belt. And so really, those numbers are more of a lesson in platoon splits than they are some kind of secret, mysterious reason that Posey would somehow play better at first base than in games when he's the catcher. But anyway, Posey's offense seems to have declined dramatically over the last several years. So that level of offense, just simply, there's no reason to try to plug that in at first base. And lastly, regarding Joey Bart, I think they're going to try to groom him in at catcher. And then we have heard Farhan Zaidi say that they've also considered playing him at third base at times to kind of transition him into the catcher's role while Posey is still on the team. So I think it's far more likely that they'll try to use Bart at third than at first, because of the same reason that just playing someone at first, the offensive bar just is much higher. If you hit like 10% above average, you're an excellent hitting catcher, you're a solid hitting third baseman, but you're kind of an average first baseman in that regard offensively. So you really only want to play guys at first who don't really have the ability to add any kind of defensive value anywhere else on the field. And that's certainly the case with Belt, and I would imagine it's the case with Bart as well, especially because he does draw rave reviews for his catching ability. And the fact that they said they're using him or going to try to use him at third at times to transition him in, I would expect them to try that before they just plug him into the least valuable defensive position on the field. So I think the second most likely person besides Belt to be the catcher or the first baseman in 2021 would be someone else, not Bart or Posey. Because, you know, offense is generally easy to achieve at first base, there are other options out there if they wanted to go another direction besides Brandon Belt, which eventually, of course, they'll have to do as he gets older here and approaches the end of his contract. So it's definitely possible they'll look to move him at some point, but I don't think now is the time given how much of a down season he had. they should try to reconfigure the ballpark, see if he can have an outstanding part of a season, and then look to deal him if they ever were going to try to trade him. So anyway, that question, as you can see, brought up a lot of different topics, so it took up the entire first half. So coming up in the second half of the show, we're going to continue looking at this Giants mailbag and answering your questions from Twitter. Everybody loves a night out, whether it's seeing your favorite team or seeing your favorite band in person. I want to talk about the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, where you can attend these shows and events and earn credit towards attending your next live event through Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is the top source for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price, section, row, sit exactly where you want to sit, all through the Vivid Seats app. And what makes them really stand out here is their Vivid Seats loyalty program, which allows you to earn credit back through something called Vivid Seats Rewards. You can download the Vivid Seats app at the App Store or Google Play Store, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. You can attend the biggest concerts, the hottest games, postseason games, theater shows, and more. Download the app, automatically join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today, and make a memory that lasts a lifetime, and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. If you enter special promo code POSTSEASON at checkout, you can earn a discount of up to $100. We talk about baseball performance all the time on this show, but what about performance in the bedroom? That's right, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew is the first chewable with the same active FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. They can be taken anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Yes, I actually know someone who has tried this product, and they have extremely positive things to report about its effectiveness. The best part about Blue Chew is that it's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no more visit to the doctor's office, waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness around this topic. Blue Chew is made in the United States and prepares and shipped direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit www.bluechew.com and get your first shipment free when you use special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's it. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code MLB, and try it. It's free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Okay, as promised, here in the second half of the show, we're going to continue to run through the Giants mailbag and answer the questions you guys submitted on Twitter. Steve says, as a follow-up to the Pilar conversation a few episodes ago, do you have any thoughts on Steven Duggar's troubles translating his respectable strikeout and walk rates in the minors to the majors? It's a pretty drastic difference and more than you would expect from a highly touted guy, at least internally. So there are many different ways to approach an answer to this question. And the first thing that comes to mind is I do wonder if he was highly touted by the old front office and the old regime, if he would still be highly touted if Farhan Zaidi was here all along, would he have been as highly touted as he was within the organization under Evans and Sabian? So I don't know the answer to that question. I think there's no doubt that Steven Duggar's greatest strength is probably defensive ability. But looking at his minor league numbers, yeah, it is kind of surprising that the strikeout and walk rates are so much worse in his major league career. Like just for example, in 2019 in AAA, and some of this, you know, he started the year with the Giants and then got hurt and was down in the minors before earning his way back up. But in AAA this past season, he had a 17.5% walk rate, which is just ridiculously high. And he only was striking out 20.6% of the time. That being said, the Pacific Coast League, which is where the Rivercats play, was like the most high-scoring, ridiculous offensive environment that it ever has been. And so pitchers clearly struggled this year in AAA. And so looking back in the past, like in 2018 in AAA, Duggar was walking a very respectable 11% of the time, but striking out 29% of the time. And in 2017 in AAA, he was walking 15% of the time, which is, again, very good, striking out just 22%. But in 30 games for San Jose, Duggar was striking out 32% of the time that year. So he's always occasionally had a strikeout issue. I guess the big thing might be the walks. And in 114 games in the major leagues, Duggar's walk rate is just 6%, which is not that impressive. So he's consistently walking above 10% and sometimes as high as 15%+ in the minors, yet only walking 6% of the time in the majors. That is a little bit surprising, but it all goes back to pitchers are not going to be afraid to challenge you until you prove that you can burn them, and he just has not been able to do that with just a .286 on base percentage and a .358 slugging, which is a .117 isolated power after you factor in his .241 average. So all that together, he's been about 30% below average offensively as a major leaguer, so pitchers just have not been afraid to challenge him. So it's not surprising in a way because he has to prove that he can do damage. Otherwise, pitchers are going to go right after him. And, you know, that's kind of anecdotal. I would have to look at, is he being challenged more than other guys? So actually just look that up really quickly. And he is being challenged more than other guys. Steven Duggar has seen pitches in the strike zone about 45% of the time. And the major league average in 2019 was just 42% of the time. So 3 percentage points more often, Duggar is seeing pitches in the zone. He's also getting first pitch strikes about 65% of the time when the league average is just about 60%. Surprisingly, Duggar's outside the zone swing rate is actually better than average by a few percentage points. I would have thought that he chases more than average, but he hasn't. So he's seeing strikes and basically not doing damage with them. That's what that tells me. So until he starts to punish pitchers, they're just going to continue to attack him, and that walk rate is not going to be that high. That being said, it is interesting that the steamer projection for Steven Duggar has him at an 8% walk rate, which is significantly higher than what he's been able to do in his major league career at just 6%. The projected strikeout rate is exactly the same as what it has been in his major league career at 28.2%. Also want to point out that against lefties, he's been about 40% below average, striking out almost 35% of the time. So maybe at some point in the not too distant future, they need to stop playing him against left-handed pitchers because those numbers are just unplayable. And he's also had a .373 average on balls in play against lefties, which is really high. So you would expect that to regress. And we're talking about regression from a guy who's been 40% below average against lefties. So that is not a recipe for success. Just a 62 ISO against lefties, 35% strikeout rate, as I said. So I don't know if he is seriously a part of their long-term plans or not. You hope that the tools translate, you know, the speed clearly plays, but you're just going to need a little bit more hit out of Steven Duggar. Anyway, those questions took up a lot of time, and so unexpectedly, that is all the time we have for today. But we will continue to do these mailbags and Q&As all off season long. So there's going to be plenty of opportunity to get in your questions, and I will answer them on the show. Remember, to get this show every single weekday, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider rating it, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow. And until then, we'll see you next time.